one. So, once again, we have the great delight and pleasure to welcome Dave Rico to Many Rivers Books and Tea. As many of you know, probably most of you know, he is the author of many books. You must have the latest count, I assume.
15 or so.
15 or so. I think it's actually 16, if not 17, but because I remember figuring that out the last time you were here.
Oh.
But in any event, Dave is the author, of course, now, of this very latest just-published book, The Power of Grace, Recognizing Unexpected Gifts on Our Path. He is, as many of you already know, a psychotherapist in Santa Barbara and San Francisco. He teaches at Berkeley and other institutions, both south and north in California, in addition. And we are delighted, once again, to welcome... Thank you. And this is his first event, the first occasion where he will publicly discuss, read from, and tell people about this new latest book, The Power of Grace. So welcome, Dave Rico, join us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rob and Jim, for inviting me, and Stu. Well, so much accent in the self-help movement is on doing certain practices or engaging in certain exercises so you could become more psychologically healthy and more spiritually aware. And it felt to me like that puts all the accent on our efforts and could even build up our ego with that sense of, boy, look at me, look what I accomplished by my discipline with all the practices. So I thought it was important to bring up the other side of how we become healthier, how we become enlightened, which is the gift dimension, that it's not only what we do. There's another force or power. You can call it God, higher power, universe, Buddha mind. There's something else, something more, shall we say, than our effort that kicks in and helps us move toward more health and more spiritual aliveness. That is my topic. And of course, the word grace is associated with religion, but this is not a religious book. This is a psychological, spiritual book, and I'm trying to make the case for grace being a word that all of us could use, and we take it out of the hands of religion in the sense that it only belongs there. And we start to use this word ourselves and say, well, by the gift of grace, certain wonderful things have happened in my life. So I'm going to give some simple examples from the introduction. And we've all said things like this. Suddenly, the perfect solution just popped into my mind. Just popped in is different from I kept working on it until I got to it through logic and through intellectual acumen. Just popped in. Well, where did it pop in from? Somehow something came to us and through us rather than from us. We've sometimes said this: I don't know where I found the courage, but I finally spoke up. So it's not only intellectual, it's also in the realm of action. I can't for the life of me figure out how it happened, but everything just fell into place. We've had that experience. Finally, without even trying, I just met the right guy or woman. I don't know what came over me, but after all these years of hanging back, I finally stepped up to the plate. But what helped us step up? That's what I call the unexpected gift on our path. I felt as if I were guided to this decision. The realization came to me in a dream. While volunteering at hospice, I found myself saying something really right on, and I did not think of it on my own or know it before. It just kind of came through. Suddenly, I just stopped wanting to retaliate. And I had a change of heart, and I was able to forgive. Forgiveness is certainly an example of a grace, because you can't make it happen. You can pardon, but you can't forgive. That has to come through. Come from where? Anything that represents more than just your ego effort. So let me read a couple of quick things from here which will help us put it together, and then we'll kind of open it up a little more. You remember the phrase in Star Wars, call upon the Force. So that would be an example of grace. And you can call upon it. You can ask for a grace, but you can't make it happen. You can't merit it. It just has to come freely. The word grace is usually associated with religion and belief in God. But this book is not about theology. We can find an enriching resource within a religious tradition that preserved the belief in grace over the centuries so that we could use it now. So grace comes from something that's beyond our ego or beyond human making or beyond natural causes. The Latin word for that is transcendence. It comes from two Latin words, trans and scendere. Trans means over, scendere means climb. So something in us climbs over our ordinary intellect and will and gives us a new wisdom or a new strength. That transcendent reality is grace. And grace in Latin, of course, means free, as in gratis. It also means thanks, as in gracias. And it's something like this presence of grace or realization of grace is something like the awe you feel in nature. So this quote by John Muir from his book, My First Summer in the Sierras. It's easier to feel than to realize or in any way explain Yosemite grandeur. It's easier to feel than to explain Yosemite grandeur. That's the same as it's easier to feel than to explain the power of grace. So transcendent means more is happening than what we notice. Here I have grace is a given of life, so every person receives a grace of some kind. You can say no to it, but it's offered often, much more often than we notice. An acknowledgement of grace does nothing less than widen our vision of what it means to be human. So to be human must mean more than just the IQ that I have, just the knowledge that I've gained. There must be more going on in my life. Something else is afoot that's bigger than what's right here in this body-mind. In other words, a new vision of what it means to be human, a destiny we are called to that is transcendent, that's more than we thought possible. and we can only come to it with an aptitude for immense surprise. So these are my three ways of describing it. More, let's say in a grace-filled relationship, you would say, more is present here than just you and me. That would be the presence of grace. Or, more has happened than I could make happen. That's grace. Or, more is afoot here than what we see in front of us. To find our full humanity, we need contact with more than the minimum criteria defined as mental health in Psychology 101. Our spiritual calling to co-create a world of justice, peace, and love is too grand an enterprise to accomplish by willpower alone. It's not stretching a point to say that our appreciation of grace is important not only to our spirituality, but to all our relationships. Indeed, there's a direct connection between grace and how we see our life purpose and who we are with other people. Because we are mediators of grace to others, and others are mediators of grace to us. And then finally, while I was working on this book, I shared what I was doing with this friend of mine, and this is what he wrote back. So I quoted it in here. He said, In some way I do believe in grace, but I don't, and I do count on it. I just seem to have this idea that grace is looming on my shoulder and knows exactly what to do when I'm struggling or clueless. Somehow it knows when to enter my life, but I can't control it. I can only trust it as my wingman. It does not guarantee my safety or joy or whatever. It just lets me know that there's something bigger than myself that is very kind and all-knowing, and that if my landing field is properly maintained, it may just land in the field of my life. Grace is a gift. When I get this gift, I get a very good feeling about being valued. In other words, we must matter to this higher power than ourselves, because here he, she, it is distributing graces that help us fulfill ourselves and contribute to others. It's been a great grace to me to write this book. It has not been a task, but an opening, and I'm hoping it will be a grace and opening to you as you read it. All it will take is a yes to the more, and who would say no to that? And I ended with this quote by Dag Hammarskjöld. I don't know who or what put the question. I don't know when it was put. I don't even remember answering. But at some moment, I said yes to someone or something. And of course, that would be a yes to the source of grace. Where is this source? Everywhere, especially deep down in ourselves. What in Christianity is called the indwelling spirit, or in Buddhism is called our true nature. The something more than just the ego. The something that never dies, nor was ever born. Ego was born on a certain day and will die on another day. But indwelling spirit just goes on. So this power of grace is beyond time, but happens in time. Okay, so that's just a kind of introduction to the topic. Questions so far on this part of it all? Yes, what's your first name again?
Betty.
Yeah.
You know David Rickey?
Yes, I saw him the other day.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
Is he back?
He's back here from Haiti.
He used to say that as a fish doesn't know it's swimming in water, we are swimming in grace. We exist in this field of grace, but we don't recognize it.
That's a very good way to put it.
Yeah, and I like the idea of that we're swimming in grace.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It would be the gift dimension of life, maybe you could put it that way. It has a dimension of requirement of discipline and effort, and it has a dimension of gift. A kind of shift that happens inside you, that would be a grace, compared to the plodding steps that you have to take to get to a certain skill.
One of the other Hebrew connections with the word with grace, yeah, is favor.
Yes, I have that in here. She's quoting the book of, you know, about Noah. Noah found favor with God, and the word Hebrew word for favor is grace in the Christian view.
Yeah. Yeah. So just, you know, just add that other dimension of how we understand favor. You know, it's a gift, as you said.
Yes. Yes, a special connection,
yeah,
that helped him do something or be something. Yeah.
So, so religion kind of has tried to preserve the idea, although it didn't necessarily embody it. For instance, I mean, like,
that's very true.
Selling
indulgences
or saying, right, that you have. But what if?
That's a very good point. Trusting the grace and the Holy Spirit is like very rare.
Well, it's hard anyway, right?
It is.
It wasn't exactly a popular idea.
No.
But it should have been.
Yes. It's really the foundation of all religions, because there's no religion that says, well, if you do all these things, you are guaranteed something. They all say, do all these things, yes, you will be rewarded, but it's all a gift from God. They all say that. They throw that in. But they don't always act that way.
But they're afraid to stop telling people they have to work hard, because then everything will, you know, they'll
fall apart.
Fall apart.
Yeah. Good point.
That's the judging mind.
Yeah. Yes, this would be more of a mindful style, going to this grace dimension. Somebody else had a question?
So how can you open yourself to receive this? Through meditation, for instance, or just holding yourself open to every moment, or what would you say?
So she's I'll go to my chapter 12, which is called What Helps Us Open to Grace. And the first thing that helps us is noticing it and showing gratitude. Karl Barth, who's the famous Lutheran theologian, says, grace is to gratitude as heaven is to earth. So grace, heavenly gift, gratitude, earthly response, and these kind of work together. So the more likely you are to show gratitude, the more do you open yourself to the grace. And of course you're saying this, I open myself to the grace, and you can ask for the grace, but you can't make it happen. Secondly, we open to the grace when we say yes to the givens of life. As I mentioned in my book, The Five Things We Cannot Change, we take the things in life that we can't change and we look for the grace dimension in them. Or another way of saying it is, everything that happens gives us an opportunity to make some contact with this gift element So when you say yes to what happens, you're more likely to notice the gift dimension of it. So let's say one of the givens of life is pain is part of everybody's story. Could be psychological, spiritual, physical, mental, but everybody goes through all kinds of pain in the course of life. If you come to this pain with the attitude of, okay, give me the courage to change whatever I can change about it, but then the serenity to accept the part of it that isn't changeable, when you do that, that's the equivalent of saying yes to the way it is. And in that yes is a key that somehow turns in the keyhole of the suffering and opens the door into something that we find useful or something that we gain. So there's something about the yes to what is that opens us to the grace dimension. Does this make sense to everybody? So for this, let's take a look at our card, because this is a quote from the book. And I'd like to just walk you through it, because this is probably the best answer to how we open ourselves to grace. Does everybody have this? Good. So I say yes to everything, and I say this every morning, and I recommend it to you as a daily affirmation or prayer. I say yes to everything that happens to me today as an opportunity to give and receive love without reserve. I am thankful for the enduring capacity to love that has come to me from the Sacred Heart of the universe. May everything that happens to me today open my heart more and more. May all that I think, say, feel, and do express loving kindness toward myself, those close to me, and all beings. May love be my life purpose, my bliss, my destiny, my calling, the richest grace I can receive or give. And may I always be especially compassionate toward people who are considered least or last, or who feel alone or lost. So the last part is the compassion element. This is based on the Buddhist practice of loving kindness. So you're fanning out the love from yourself to those close to you, to everyone, so that love becomes your actual life purpose. And it all came from recognizing the opportunity to love that's in whatever happens, and thanking a power beyond yourself, heart of the universe instead of mind, that wants you to open more and more. Something wants us to open to grace. It's not an effortful action on our part. We're getting help even there. Questions about what I just read or any of this part of what we're talking about? So you see the idea here is I can't make it happen, but I can always open to it. Did you have a question? No. Okay, and then the final way that I believe you can open yourself to grace is in that little prayer that's used in the Alcoholics Anonymous program. Courage. The original phrasing of the prayer was written in 1943 by Lutheran theologian Reinhold Niebuhr. And the original version is, God, give me the grace to have the courage to change what I can change, the grace to have the serenity, so forth. So it's asking for three graces. The serenity, the courage, and the wisdom, when you open to those three and even believe that they're in you, that you were born with serenity, courage, and wisdom, it changes the relationship you have to a higher power. You're not asking for something that's foreign. You're asking to open what's already inside. So it's really, give me the grace to summon up the courage that was given to me when I face things that call for change. Give me the grace to summon up the serenity to accept what I can't change. Give me the grace to summon up the wisdom to know the difference. I see a lot in that little prayer. Daria?
So when you say, give me the grace to do something, does that mean grace me by helping me open to doing it?
Yeah.
That's the thing?
Yes. Yeah, it's not like a commodity. It's more like...
So it give me the grace of kind of like the grace to X, because yeah, it's just syntactically.
No, it'd be better to say
grace
to grace me with opening and to accessing these three powers inside me, which were inputted into me at birth by the Sacred Heart of the universe.
Well, why did they change it in the 12-step program?
I think they just simplified
it.
Yeah.
Because if someone said, God, grant me the serenity, it really does sound like someone's giving me something from outside.
Yeah. No, it isn't from outside.
Does that make sense?
That's why I have cultivating instead of getting. You're cultivating what's already in there. They're in there as three potentials. And then somebody or something comes along and activates them. For instance, when you walked into the first day of school, you came in with three potentials: reading, writing, and arithmetic. Humans have those three in their genes, in their genetic makeup. Then the teacher shows you, okay, here's how you do the reading. Bring up that power to read. Shows you how to do it, and so forth. See what I mean? It didn't come in as something foreign. All humans have this ability to work with words and numbers. And likewise, we have these three virtues. The next way to open to grace is, of course, to let go of one's big fat ego that thinks it all depends on me. The self-centeredness. Like, I don't need any help from anybody. If you have that attitude, then how could you possibly even believe that there is grace? The ego we let go of is not the healthy part of us that makes wise decisions. It's the neurotic, anxiety-driven, compulsive, fear-based tendency to focus only on our own needs and desires. This narcissistic ego operates on the basis of self-interest, control, and entitlement. And when we become ego-invested in these ways, we harm our spirituality because we cancel the possibility of opening to grace. Like, I really do need help from something beyond myself. And then finally, I talk about Buddhist Eightfold Path as my final way of opening to grace. That we work on our view of the world, our intention, our speech, our action, our livelihood, our effort, our mindfulness, and our concentration. I explain how to do that with each one. But I do want to share this quotation from a letter by Thomas Merton to peace worker Jim Forrest, 1966. So this Jim was a guy who did a lot for anti-Vietnam protesting and so forth, wound up in jail. And Thomas Merton wrote to him and said, "Don't depend on the hope of results. When you're doing the kind of work you've taken on, you may have to face the fact that your work will be apparently worthless and even achieve no results at all, even results that are opposite of what you want. As you get used to this idea, you start more and more to concentrate not on the results, but on the value, the rightness, the truth of the work itself." Nonviolence instead of violence. "Then you can be more open to the power that will work through you without your knowing it." So another way of letting go of ego is to follow the kind of approach that we see in Hinduism. We never rely on results. We just practice our devotion, open ourselves, and let the chips fall where they may. And when you do it that way, you're more likely to notice the gift coming through. Questions about this part? I wanted to also read something from the final part of from the epilogue. I start with a quotation by Robert Haight, The Experience and Language of Grace, one of the books I used when I was doing my research. "Grace is in the experience of infinite longing, of radical optimism, of unquenchable discontent, of our torment about the insufficiency of everything attainable, our radical protest against death and endings, the experience of being confronted with an absolute love precisely where it is incomprehensible and seems to be silent and aloof, the experience of radical guilt or of still abiding hope. These elements are, in fact, part of the divine force that impels us by grace toward our fulfillment. Hence, in them, grace is experienced, as well as all it takes to be human." So, grace is not only in wonderful, miraculous gifts, it's also in so many of the things that feel hurtful or dangerous, threatening. And then I say, "Grace is not an abstract concept or a twilight zone surreal experience. It is earthy, not otherworldly, in that it works through our senses, shows itself in concrete situations. It is transcendent, but it contains you and me in every here and now. In this sense, the transcendence is within, not beyond, our human story. The fact that love is the goal of our work and practice as humans is what makes our joy so enduring. The 19th century British Prime Minister William Gladstone wrote, 'We look forward to the time when the power of love will replace the love of power. Then will the world know the blessings of peace.'" The word blessings refers to the graces that come to everyone when love, our luscious grace, becomes all we do and are. Now only grace abides, the tireless usher still escorting us and every shimmering star into the single ceaseless smile of all that is or was or will be. That's how I end the book. So it's a lot of this has to do with trusting that there are graces in our life, in people, places, and things, and in inner experiences and in outer events, that there isn't any province of a human life that would not be a holder of grace or a mediator of it. And so we just start to look for it everywhere. And writing this book has helped me do that. So, any final questions?
Is the gift of grace, in your view, freely given, or is it does the receiving of it entail an obligation on our part?
Good question. First of all, freely given does make sense, so it's not based on merit. One of the part of the part of the research I was doing, because one of my chapters is called Grace in Religion, and I found something very interesting in the Catholic Encyclopedia. It said, there actually is no such thing as merit. That matched a statement in Buddhism. There is no merit. It's all gift. You can't say I merited heaven. Oh, I did all the right things, I obeyed the commandments, so now I'm going to go to heaven. It isn't set up that way. It's entirely divine mercy. It's entirely grace. So, to go back to your question, the grace often comes with a challenge to go ahead and act on it. So I got the courage to speak up, now it's up to me to speak up. So the grace takes us to the threshold, and then it's up to us to, shall we say, carry it forward, pay it forward, by taking that free gift and going with it, acting in a way that puts it into practice. Does this make sense, everybody? So it's not effort leading to grace, but it is grace that challenges us to put in effort.
So when I use a word like obligation, that in a sense that makes sense.
Well, obligation has a little more of a juridical feeling, but yes, you can say the grace has somehow put a claim on me to take a certain action.
All right, well, in human transactions, if I give you something, the sort of archaic way of expressing appreciation would be saying much obliged.
Yeah, or thank you. Or
and that, in that, there's a sense of a responsibility, if you will.
Yes.
Maybe that's a better charge.
That would be a good way to put it. Yeah.
Obligation.
Yes. You're called upon to respond in a certain way. Good point. Sorry.
Have you brought this into your work in psychotherapy with people who are often in unbalanced states who may have a particularly difficult time opening to grace? Do you have a way to bring that into that work?
Yeah, one of the things that's happened is I notice it at work when people tell their story. I can see like little moments of grace. And sometimes I do ask about it. But the other thing you just brought up about how you would move someone in that direction, that's a little more difficult. Because I don't want to bring in something that sounds too religious. But one of the main ways that grace shows itself is in synchronicity. strange coincidences that happen that kind of move us along in a certain way. So I can certainly use that as part of the work. Like, oh, well, what's the coincidence here that moved you in this direction? Synchronicity is the archetype of grace. And by the way, I mentioned this in the book. The people who show up as the assisting forces, the mediators of grace that help you on your journey, are rarely heroes. They're usually wounded in some way. So if you go to your Wizard of Oz, she's helped by three assisting forces. They symbolize the three graces. One is wounded by being not having a brain. The other one doesn't have a heart. And the other one doesn't have courage. They're even more wounded than she is. And she even has to help them. But they're the mediators of the grace. That's an extremely important archetypal fact, that we don't go to the big shot heroes. I mean, she could have met three, what's that sport that's so rough?
Football. Rugby.
Rugby. She could have met three rugby players. We'll take care of this whole thing, they would have said, and done it. But she doesn't. She meets up with the scarecrow falling apart and the other one's all rusty. And I mean, they're messed up people. That's so important. That's so important, that one little noticing that. I noticed it when I was writing. I thought, oh my God, when I think of all the various stories, yeah, Snow White meets seven dwarfs. Not seven rugby players. They're the ones who help her. What is this archetypal story trying to tell us? It's trying to say that it's all about grace. It's not about the powers that humans respect. And that grace comes through the most lowly and wounded, the messed up, comes through them faster than through the totally healthy big shots. Make sense to everybody? There's another question.
The wound becomes its own healing. The wound heals itself.
Yes.
Indiscriminately.
Yeah, there's a kind of remedy that comes through. That would be the grace. Anyway, when you read the book, if you do, you will go into all kinds of ways of seeing how grace is working in your life, and how some of the things that you might have thought were so unappealing and unpromising have a lot more in them than you could imagine. Yeah.
Well, being maybe the only person here who had not read your books, I'm just curious that, did you start out with a vocation, or did you just take acid, or how did you get
an interest in this topic?
Well,
I started to mention this topic when it occurred to me that, oh, there's a grace element. It's not all about these practices. Because all my books have practices that I recommend. And then it occurred to me that, no, there's a grace element too. So I started to bring in the grace element in all the talks that I gave. And then I thought, well, it's a worthy topic to have a book on it, because the only books on it on Amazon were all religious. So this is the first one that brings it to psychological and spiritual dimension. Okay, any other? Yeah. Stuart.
Yeah, there's a phrase, justice is blind. Mm-hmm. Is grace blind?
Yes, grace is blind in the sense that it gives its gifts indiscriminately rather than to those who are worthy or deserving. That's a very important point. For instance, so you go to your mythology to find the deepest truths about ourselves. So Greek myth, Zeus blinded the god Plutus, as in plutocracy, which means rule by the rich, like what we have here. He blinded Plutus so that Plutus could give the riches without knowing to whom he was giving them. Mm-hmm. What are they trying to say? It's indiscriminate. Riches, graces. So it's not as if it only goes to the worthy, it goes to anyone. Betty?
Is there a practice, a Buddhist practice called metta?
Yes.
And is that maybe relevant to this pursuit of accessing grace?
Very much so. That's why I have on this.
Can you explain it, please?
It's beaming out loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity, first to yourself, then to those close to you, and ultimately to everyone. And you do this as a daily practice. And that's what's on here. And what is described, what I'm describing as yet another way to open yourself to grace. Yeah.
I work with young people a lot, and I realize that there's a bit of a disservice when we pull these concepts out of a cultural and religious context, because we who have been through a lot of life experiences, who can look back and say, yes, there was grace, there was synchronicity, the 20-year-old, the 21-year-old, the 22-year-old don't have that.
Good point.
And they don't have the cultural gift of knowing that there is grace that perhaps other generations had.
Yes. Because they didn't have the religious background.
Very few young people have a religious background. So I see very lost people in that generation who, of course, they're receiving grace, but they don't have the ways of recognizing it or the trust.
That's a very good point. So that would be something you could try to bring in. It's hard to explain it.
Right.
But you can point it out in certain ways.
Well, do you see that it could come into our cultural context in a bigger way than through maybe ecology, through environmental, as our young people are very involved with that.
Like, how could they be more aware of the grace element? Well, one way is to notice that there are special moments in which you just know that you're clocking into something that you didn't know before, like a sudden insight, an intuition. That might be a way to start. Or you try a certain skill and you keep white-knuckling it, trying to increase your skill, and then one day you just automatically do it. That shift is like grace, how grace works. So pointing out little things like that might help.
So part of the mentoring elder is to reflect that.
Yes.
Since it's not a given in our culture.
Yes. And give them some of these cards. This might help us.
A little stack over here.
Right. Yeah, there are plenty more if you want extras. Mm-hmm. Somebody else had a question? Yeah.
So in the spiritual traditions of the past, there have been practices and teachings to prepare oneself to for the allowing of grace to appear. Meditation, prayer, this goes on and on, both in the Orthodox traditions and in the more esoteric.
Mm-hmm.
So if we are to disengage grace from the traditions, the religious traditions, I think the question arises of what are the means of preparing oneself, putting oneself in the attitude of reception, someone like Emerson would have said, to allow this grace. It seems to me that there's something of a conscious, we want to say, effort or receiving that's still required with or without the religious underpinnings.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see that in...
It would be the attitude of a continual openness to something more that will contribute to my practice than just what I do. A trust that there is such a more. At first it will just be a kind of faith or belief, but gradually you'll see it at work. And I certainly have seen in my own life that, you know, I have certain skills as a therapist, but every once in a while I hear myself saying something that is really helpful, and I know I didn't know that before. I cherish that as a grace. So when you start to notice that, which happens to everyone, you start to become aware of this gift dimension.
So it seems that means there's some kind of cultivation of awareness.
Yeah, it will be awareness of it. And then gratitude for it really helps. Okay, let's have one last question, then I can wind up.
Did someone do anything? Well, I just was thinking, what about the shadow of the other side of it would be the ability to tolerate the absence of grace. I mean, to tolerate the... I'm just wondering what you think of this, or maybe what you think of it, that in a sense, you're opening yourself to the event of grace if you're able to tolerate darkness and lack of hope and still be there and be open and you know, and there's nothing happening.
So the tolerance of the darkness of that void that can happen where nothing seems to work, but yet I am suspended in this egoless place where I have no power. That ability is the grace. When you use the word tolerate, there's something in me that's letting this be okay.
Mm-hmm.
That is itself the grace. The grace is not, I was sprung out of it.
Oh, darn.
That would be one grace. But another grace is, I've been able to hang here in this.
Mm-hmm. Without shooting up.
Yeah. And it reminds me of a superb example of how grace, and I wanted to end with this anyway, also has finally a sense of accompaniment. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. So the fact that I walked through is the grace. It's not that the dark valley is the place of no grace. It's that I walked through instead of I was dragged through. I walked through. That was the grace. And that is what gave me the next part, I will fear no harm. Because in this position that grace has put me in, the ability to walk through, I discovered my fearlessness. And when those two came together, that I had the grace to walk through and the fear left me, that would be the equivalence of feeling as if the grace had become so big, it was like someone accompanying me. Hence, for thou art with me. Which you can take literally as God with King David. Or you can take as a sense of accompaniment that is universe extensive. It doesn't have to be a person. It could be just a feeling of I'm not alone. And that would be the third and final grace. First grace I walked through. Second, my fear left me. Third, I felt I was not alone. All right there in the 23rd Psalm. Well, thank you all, and I'll stay here if you want me to sign your book.
And thank you all for coming tonight. As you know, many of you know, we have a custom of dana, Buddhist generosity. There's a bowl over there. We encourage you to contribute to it, and we will retain half to maintain events like this store for events like this in the future, and share the rest with our speaker. I want to point out that in addition to many copies of The Power of Grace, which is gracefully a mere $16.95, we also have, of course, many other copies of Dave's books and tapes as well here for your perusal, so don't neglect to check those out as you leave. And Dave indicated, he'll be around here to do some signing. So. Thank you so much for coming tonight. We really appreciate it, and it's my grace to have these events in this store. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay.